speaking today with State Senator Mario Gallegos, who represents my district, District 6. Senator, you were elected to the House in 1990 and then to the Senate in 94. What is it that makes you want to keep coming back every 2 or 4 years?
Well, I was a firefighter before I got into this business, and I volunteered for my union, and it goes way back before then. My parents were always involved in the East End, whether it be at the civic club level, PTA. My mother, my dad, right back fresh from the war, American Legion commander. Community activists and with the fire department, he was their spokesman on Spanish radio KLVL, and mother always got involved in East End politics there. I didn't know until I was the age of 26 that mother had, other than dad, was in the Navy in the war, that mother had served in the War Department in the Pentagon during the war. And I did not know that. I mean, they never talked about it. They never, mentioned it. And it was a long story there, really, to tell about my mom. And she kept, inside. A lot of veterans, especially women, kept, to themselves. They didn't broadcast of what their role was during the war. I didn't find out until I was 26 years old that mother worked in the War Department, in the Pentagon. And if you remember the movie Saving Private Ryan, the teletype, that's where she worked. And, I was mind-boggled by that. But, all that coupled with community involvement, she had 7 kids and all that. And then got me kind of, toward joining up with her. I when I was in the early age, did not like politics whatsoever, but following mom and dad and the campaigns that they worked on, back in the old days before computers, mother's den, was cleared out during the fall before every campaign, every November. All our furniture would go out, and here come tables of chairs, phones, and phone lists. Mother would run campaigns right out of her house. And I would always notice, especially when she helped Louis Welch for mayor, he'd drive up as a short guy, and he was a short guy, and right after he'd leave, a few weeks later, here comes the tables and chairs and phones and phone lists. So that's kind of what my family's been all about here in the East End. My grandfather settled in this neighborhood in downtown Houston in 1905, went to Magnolia Park. There at Turning Basin in 1909. That's when Magnolia Park was created. And he was a big civic leader in those days. During the day, he was the head janitor at Rice University. But in the evenings and on weekends, he fought for, he fought for rights there for the Hispanics in the East End. So, there's I think, coupled with it's in our blood, the volunteerism that I did for my union, my local 341 in the Houston Fire Department, plus went to Austin. That's where I learned the system in Austin. I think that kind of keeps me going. There's a voice at the table, not only a voice, but also a voice for my community, and that is really what's been. You can't do anything if you're not at the table. Let's just be realistic about it, and if you don't have a voice at the table, you're an outsider looking in. You can pound on the table all you want, you can yell all you want, you can sit in front of City Hall all you want, or at Harris County, or in the Capitol, in Austin, or all the way to Washington, D.C. You can't do anything unless you have a voice in the table. It's all about empowerment, and that's what I believe that, this is not 1960 anymore, it's just 2010. Obviously the geography here in Houston is changing by the minute, and it'd be easy for me to say, my health has not been that good, but I think that, God has given me a second chance at life and with a new liver, and I think that has really It'd be easy for me to just quit, you know, and say, hey, I've done my job, you know. But I think as issues come up, you know, I take on, if you know, as you notice, Charles, I take on the issues that are not popular, you know, and the people that I take on are obviously the big corporates of the world, the rodeo, Centerpoint, Houston Galveston Area Council. I can go on and on and on of who I've taken on. It's not popular, but I don't mind telling you that it's paid dividends. You know, there's more, because of the rodeo, there's more inner-city scholarships for kids in my Senate district, and they're working now with the Hispanic Chamber. The rodeo is working with the Hispanic Chamber to include them in the vendorship over at the rodeo. Centerpoint is now using minority vendors on the big, I'm talking about the big, big money contract, the infrastructure, underground utility contracts. Those are the big ones. And Houston-Galveston Area Council, I didn't even know they existed until they cut Project SIB. It's been here since 1964, completely cut them off the funds. My staff did the research on it. We thought they were undoubtedly, you know, they were dealt with, you know, unfairly. Went to the Houston-Galveston Area Council, fought for Project SIB. They cut me off. They wouldn't let me finish my presentation. I told them I'll see you in Austin. I filed a bill to completely do away with the Houston-Galveston Area Council, and had a Republican colleague file it in the Senate, in the House, because he felt like I did, that we were getting shortchanged. You know, as far as stimulus monies that were targeted for Harris County, workforce, education, health care, all of that. You wouldn't believe the money that Houston-Galveston Area Council holds over there. They've been under the radar screen, but hold about a $3 billion budget over there. You know, and it's unbelievable the money they go through. And they have contracts with the state, you know, on the, on your, on your cars, you know, in cars when you go get them inspected and all that. If you don't do that, well, then you get a special the voucher from the state and all that. That all goes through Houston-Galveston Area Council. They got like a $30 million contract with the state that I had no idea that how does that run. You wouldn't believe the roots of money that flows over there, you know, at Houston-Galveston Area Council. I think that all in one gulp, you know. I think you asked what continues my journey in politics, and I think that's one of the reasons.
All right, you represent a district that is at least partially in an industrial area. Your office is not far from the Ship Channel. Lately, there's been a big head-butting contest, if you will, between the state and federal government over clean air requirements. You know, the state has been suing the EPA for trying to enforce Clean Air Act regulations. The Environmental Protection Agency has said that the Texas hasn't done a sufficient job. You know, some of this, you know, this affects your district both in terms of business, but also in terms of the residents. Where do you stand on this?
You know, I agree with the federal government. You know, I mean, if you look at my record's open for everybody to see. I have filed several pieces of legislation dealing with our partners over here on the port, the corporate sector, and on as far as monitoring devices, you know, upgrading punishment phases on illegal releases and all that, and online where constituents like yourself can go online. If there's been a release, they have to show it within the last hour if there was a release done here on the channel. All that has been blocked by special interests in the lobby, the oil and gas chemical lobby. You know, they've succeeded on blocking a lot of my piece of legislation. But I've learned to compromise with those guys. Hey, let me monitor you. You know, if you're doing a good job, I ain't gonna come after you. You know, you're doing a good job, you play by the rules, you know, you hire my folks, I understand that. You know, this thing goes both ways. You hire my folks. You know, I've lived over here all my life. You know, grew up in right there at the turning base. And I know that they hire, you know, a lot of my constituency, but I also know that my constituency can't work if they can't breathe. You know, so, and I've made that very clear to them. I said, look, you know, you hire my folks, but they can't work if they can't breathe. And I think, you know, the legislation that has clearly been introduced by myself and several other of my colleagues over on the House side, then it shows clearly that, you know, I want monitoring on a daily basis. I want control, protection for my folks, and if they're doing the job, they have nothing to fear. I agree with the federal government; they needed to come in here at least to unblock the stonewalling we've been getting at the Capitol, you know, and hopefully some of my legislation, Jessica's and others, can go through here in this next session.
Okay. In this next session, obviously the budget is a top priority. We're in the hole to the tune of something like $18 billion, at least according to House Appropriations Committee. How do you want to see the legislature deal with this?
Well, you know, I mean, there's several. I mean, $18 billion is a lot of money, you know, and we're not driving this horse, you know. It's been the Republican Party. I knew there was problems on it. If you look, Charles, if you look at the votes on the budget in the last session, because my school districts and some of my colleges were not getting what I believe it in my district was not getting, you know, the money I felt that would deserve, that was deserved, because I knew we were going into a shortfall. I mean, everybody could see it, you know. I mean, the vote in the Senate, go look at it. It's on record, you know, but there was two votes against that budget, because I knew my district was getting shortchanged. You know, my district, especially over at the in public education and higher ed and some of the workforce money that was targeted for Senate 6. You know, there's two votes against Elliot Shapley out of El Paso and Mario Gallegos out of Houston, because I felt my district was getting shortchanged in that budget.
And going forward to this session, the talk is all about cuts. You know,
we've already taken every senator has already taken almost a 10% cut in my office. We're already taking 10% cut. These cuts started, you know, before the fiscal year started, and we're going in with almost a 10% cut. I look at, like the administration always does, on a budget, they're going to look at fees, they're going to look at the sales tax, they're going to look at, all varieties of options to make up that $18 billion shortfall, you know, and I can tell you that I'm not going to, you know, because of the administration's irresponsibility, and my no vote on that budget, because I knew we were going to go into shortfall, and my said district was getting shortchanged. That you cannot just go and increase fees, sell sacks to my constituents, and these other items these fees that increases just to make up an $18 billion shortfall. That's wrong. But now, on the other hand, on the other side of the coin, you know, I've always been an advocate of gambling, you know. I believe that we're losing several billion dollars, you know, on a yearly basis, and on a biennial basis, you know, to Louisiana, Oklahoma, and New Mexico. And we're second only to California in Las Vegas, Texas. I'm talking about Texas, you know. It's a lot of money. That's a lot of money we're talking about, you know, just those three states I mentioned. I mean, I'm talking about the surround us. We're looking at, you know, $4-5 billion, you know, per year, direct and indirect, you know, and indirect might be more, you know, hotels, jobs, you know, rental cars, you know, those types of deals, and helping mom and pops, you know, business employees here in Houston, Texas, and all around the state, quite frankly. I believe that's really what's going to happen. You'll see a budget come out of there with increase, and they're looking at an increase in sales tax. And you know, I'm not gonna vote. We have the highest sales tax in the country, you know, and I'm just not gonna vote to tax my folks, you know. And my option is gambling.
Would you, what would your opinion be of an approach to revisit the 2006 property tax cuts that were mandated by the Supreme Court? You know, as you recall, property taxes were cut by a third to meet that Supreme Court decision. They created the business margins tax, raised the cigarette tax as a way of making up for the lost money that was earmarked for education, but those other funds haven't, you know,
matched
the cuts. Do you believe that should be revisited?
You cannot pay, you know, rob Peter to pay Paul. He said, I mean, that's all that is, you know. And I mean, it looks good on print that, you know, we're giving you a property tax, but then we increase your fees, we increase your sales tax, and all that. I mean, that's, you know, you say you get, you know, okay, so you get a property tax cut on one side of the coin, but then we increase your sales tax on the other. You know, that's not right. You know, I'm saying if it's going to be a real tax cut, you know, to my constituents, that let it be the tax cut and not roll over and weigh you down with a backpack full of fees and sales tax increases and heaven knows what else that's going to be proposed by the administration.
Okay. One of the things that I think you're at this point very well known for in the Senate was from 2007, the battle over voter ID in the Senate. You'd had health issues early on. Your, I believe, it was a liver transplant,
mm-hmm.
and you missed a bunch of time. There were only 11 Democrats in the Senate, minus you. There were 10, not enough to
block
mm-hmm. A bill from being considered. But they were going to not bring it up while you weren't there, and then, well, a lot of things happened. Can you talk to me a little bit about that? What, you know, when you look back on that from 2007, what do you think about?
Well, you know, you and the rest of my constituency voted for me. You know, I think that, you know, that takes responsibility. You know, and the voter ID bill is one of the biggest bills, you know, on the agenda. You know, your experts were saying, well, if the voter ID passes, what are we talking about? We're talking about at least a 5% suppression in minority voting. You know, I'm talking about after the votes are cast. You know, and 5% is a lot. I mean, you know, the difference between race I was recuperating, you know, in a bed at home but I could walk and I could talk and, you know, I mean, out of my tongue, I was sick, but Letitia Vanderpuy called me and, you know, she called me and said, look, you know, I think they're going to, I think they, you know, the lieutenant governor is going to bring it up while you're down, you know, and I just, you know, the doctors, I had already asked the doctors, hey, can I go, you know, and I mean, I promise that I'll, you know, find a bed here close and all that. And my apartment was there close to the Capitol, and, you know, I had already got some of my doctor friends in Austin to, you know, they were going to look over me and watch me, and, you know, if I needed an ambulance to carry me back and forth, you know, we'd do it, you know. But my doctor said no. And so did, you know, my family. So I told Letitia, I don't know, you know, I just, I'm weak. I told her I'm weak, but so I kind of, you know, just visited to myself there, when you're in bed and you're sick and all that, you have a lot of time to think and read. And I just really came to grips with myself, and, you know, here I am, the state senator, and the 11th vote to block, and, you know, I'm not doing any of my constituents any good at home. So I got a friend of mine to kind of sneak me out of the house, so to speak, and, you know, during the time that my wife wasn't there, that was awesome, you know, and stayed there. You know, my doctors were calling me and said, no, I'm here. So, you know, it wasn't fanfare or show, and other, I knew what I had to do. You know, I mean, you know, it takes 11 votes to block. And it just, you know, it's just, it happened to be that I was the 11th vote. You know, and I wish we would have had 12, I wouldn't have to go back. You know, we have Wendy now, you know, we have Wendy Davis now, so, you know, and we all kid each other now. So, Mario, if you get sick, you don't have to come back. We got 11 to block, you know.
Well, except that in 2009, of course, the Senate adopted a change of the rules.
To change the rules.
Where specifically, the voter ID legislation would not be subject to the two-thirds.
I know, but we blocked it in the House, thank God, and we ever did, and we'll probably do that again.
I mean, are you concerned that the Republicans in the Senate might be pushing to change the rules?
Oh, there's no doubt in my mind. I bet you they already have the resolution drafted. You know, not only that, they got it drafted for voter ID, redistricting, and immigration. You know, I mean, you watch what I'm telling you. They'll have a resolution on those three items for sure. Maybe the budget. You know, and but I know they'll have a resolution for to change the rules in the Senate for those three items.
Are you concerned that there will be a fight in the Senate over immigration? And we know that there's going to be a bill introduced in the House to impose Arizona-style laws in Texas.
Obviously I'm concerned. You know, whenever you have that type of legislation, and don't get me wrong, I'm against illegal immigration. You know, I mean, it says illegal. I mean, what part of illegal do I not understand? I understand it's illegal, you know, and especially when you're criminals. I want them gone just like everybody else. I mean, legal Hispanics here with statute and they were born and raised here or even have family in Mexico, we understand that. We understand that. And, filing a state bill is not, that's a federal responsibility. Since the 1800s, the Supreme Courts have been giving the federal government the rules, you know, all the power to do the due process of immigration. I mean, that's been before, you know, you and I got here, and it continues to be such. You know, you cannot overstep the boundaries that were created by the Supreme Court. And you know, I brought that out in my debate with Dan Patrick. He didn't like it. But it's the truth. You know, if we let states, you know, file bills on issues that the federal government would only just file a bill to do away with the Taliban, or file bills that, hey, we want, you know, the delegation from Texas wants to go to Iran and stop their nuclear bomb process over there. I mean, you see what I'm saying? I mean, you know, you just can't do that. That is the job. You know, the percentage, the poll that Fox did, I mean, it was overwhelming support. I understand that. But that support needs to be sent to their congressman, not their state senator or their state representative. That needs to go to Congress. And Congress is where the responsibility lies. It has always lied there. It's lied there since day one, and it needs to continue to lie there. And we just need to put pressure on our Congress folks to get something done. You know, that's where it lies in the federal government.
All right. You've recently been a critic of HISD Superintendent Terry Greer. Tell me a little about what's that about, and where does that stand?
You know, Charles, you know, if anybody in their right mind, with common sense, and with a computer, would have Googled him up before that vote that board vote voted for him, you would have seen the trail that he has left in every school district that he's come from. You know, it's been chaos. I mean, don't take my word for it. Look it up. You know. He's been thrown out of every school district that he's been. And I went to San Diego myself, and three new board members. He was the issue on the ballot. He was the issue on the ballot. Those three won. You know, if Greer if the board of trustees here in Houston hadn't hired him, he would have been fired from San Diego. I mean, you know, for the life of me, I can't understand why people can't understand that. All I got to do is Google him up. Find out what his track record is. He sued the board in Sacramento. He was thrown out of Amarillo. I've already talked to my colleague in Amarillo. He's right-wing Republican. I mean, this is completely opposite of what I am. You know, and if I bring up Greer, you don't want to hear what he said about Greer. You know, the guy tore up Amarillo School District. You know, and went over to Guilford and all that. I mean, he's got a track record. Why in their right mind would you want a guy come in here like, and with the programs of it, and then scrap what he's doing here? They scrapped it in San Diego. They scrapped it in Guilford. Why should my constituents, my taxpayers, pay on programs that are already scrapped in other districts, didn't work, cost money, and all that, that he's implementing here? I mean, it doesn't take a rocket. It don't take a fourth grader with a big cheap tablet and number two pencil to understand that. I mean, you know, and I mean, I'm not even on the school board, you know. I mean, they're not going to understand that, you know. Just Google him up, you know, and you'll see. I mean, you'll see what he's done, why they ran him off, you know, and all that. I cannot believe in their right mind. I don't know what the school board was drinking or smoking at the time that they voted for this guy.
Is there anything you intend to? Is there anything you intend to do?
I believe that the process in which he was picked was not transparent. You know, and I mean, go back and look at the process. Okay, they picked him. As soon as they picked him, he went to a group of Hispanics, a group of blacks, and then boom, back to San Diego. He didn't come back till about 2 days before his vote. You know, you need to look at the record. You need to look at the process. They knew that they were going to have a problem, you know, when this guy's history started coming up. You know, they knew that. The board knew that. You know, I'm the one that started raising records. I mean, all I did was Google up on my computer. Just Google him up. You can tell. I mean, signs. We've been Greer-ended. Get Greer out of here. And all these signs in Guilford and all that. Fights between parents and teachers and all that chaos. What do we want to bring up? I mean, he's completely has cleaned the slate over at HISD. I mean, all the old guard is gone. Maybe that was the purpose. You know, I mean, you know, there's theories out there that I cannot prove. You know, and this is off the record. Huh?
It is being recorded.
Well, then I won't say it. But that theory that's out there is coming to fruition every day. Now, Channel 13 is starting a series of deals today and I haven't seen it because it almost starts tonight, on where the promises of lowering the dropout rate. Now, I don't know if that's on Greer or where it's coming from. I haven't seen it yet, you know, so that record's still out. Okay. You know, but when you talk about Apollo 20, only certain schools are getting an influx of money. Okay, teachers, tutors, you know, all these Harvard, you know, all that money is going into just those schools. But what happens is the rest of the school district on a $19 million shortfall has to take the hit. I mean, you've got other kids in those other schools. You know, what are you going to do with those guys? Do you sacrifice those because of the Apollo 20 and those low performance schools that you want to lift up? I'm for that. Don't get me wrong. I'm for reform. I'm for getting bad teachers out. But you also, on the other side of the coin, have to at least tell that teacher why you are firing he or her. You know, at least give them the report card. Here's your report card. This is how we graded you, and I'm sorry. You know, and that's fair to me. HISD is not doing that, you know. They were not given the computer codes on how they're being assessed. That is wrong. They should be transparent. You know, I will change the way the process of picking a superintendent. That way the public can be involved. You know, if you have a question on Mr. Greer before he got, you know, you have the right of a forum as a constituent, a taxpayer of HISD, to ask him or her, whoever it is, questions. Hey, how did you do here? What happened here? Or get me your vision of HISD. You know, how are you going to close the achievement gap? You know, lower the dropout level, increase graduation rates, you know, and deal with all the problems that we have with the school district. I believe you should be able to answer that question. Our folks were not allowed to do that. This process was not transparent. You had behind the scenes, you know, you had board members, you know, talking salary, pension, all this stuff, which is all illegal. We just couldn't prove it. You know, We're going to change that transparency and make the process transparent. You know, that's what I felt. I felt that the taxpayers of HISD were shortchanged, not only to be part of the process, but were not told about Mr. Greer's past. You know, which they could have found out on the Google, just like you can.
All right.
You know?
You answered my first question. You talked about how you've got to have a voice in the process, a seat at the table, in order to get stuff done. And so this year, as in many other election years, there's been talk about the participation level of Latinos in elections. The turnout level tends to be lower. There's complaints on their end that politicians don't engage them. Politicians say, well, they don't vote. What needs to be done here?
I think that, I'll take the blame just like anybody else. It's not because of money. I mean, we all the elected officials I know have put our own money, you know, in the election process to try to, you know, get the vote out, you know, and try to get our folks registered to vote. Maybe this, you know, whether it takes, you know, somebody on the ballot that's popular or an issue that resonates with the folks. Maybe it's this immigration issue that might, you know, you'll see an increase in Latinos going to the polls this November. You know, I believe you got a quarter, okay, I mean, the registrar, I already just told us, we got a quarter of a million Latinos in Houston, Texas, that are legal, but they're not registered. I mean, they're legal to register. They're legal, but they won't register. You know, I think that's where you go to. You go, you know, where the fish are. You go where the fish are. You go there, try to get them registered. That's a quarter of a million. That's a lot of votes here in Houston, Texas. And then you go to the second tier. First, you got to register. If you send out a message, it does no good if you send out a message and they're not registered. You got to register them first. Once you register, then you send out a message. I mean, that message is completely. I mean, we're using Southwest Voter. We're using other groups that have come in, and I mean, we're doing everything that we can possible. It's not that we're not trying. You know, everything we can. I mean, it's mind-boggling to me. You know, you would think that we could at least get, you know, our percentage of the folks that registered to the polls. If we do everything, we phone bank, we block walk, we're doing all the right things. It's just not coming out. You know, but I think hopefully this November, issues like immigration, voter ID, and stuff like that will bring them to the polls. You know, hopefully. I mean, you know, it just, you know, I mean, if I had the answer, Charles, I'd tell you, if I had the answer and I had the money, I'd write out the check today to get my people out to vote. You know, I'm mind boggled, but I mean, we're doing the right things. And, you know, I mean, they're coming out in California. You know, they come out in Miami. They're coming out in Colorado. You watch what they do in Arizona. And I think Texas is next. I think we're on that peak. You know, where I believe that you'll see more Latinos going to come out to vote, and it's not because of the lack of we're not sending out a message. It's just, you know, we're sending out the message using all the resources that we have, the money that we have, and it just it's not getting through. I don't know whether it's apathy, call it what you want. We're just trying to continue to drive that message home that you've got to get out to vote.
All right. Senator Mario Gallegos, thank you very much for speaking to me today.
Not a problem.